Hi everyone, welcome to Girls. I have with me Joy Chick, who's CVP Identity Platform. Identity Division in CNE, right?
Yes.
Awesome. It's very complicated for me, I guess. Can you, Joy, please introduce yourself and tell us more about what you're doing right now at Microsoft?
Sure. So I'm Joy Chick. I'm the Corporate Vice President for the Identity Division in CNE. So my team is responsible for Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, or the commercial Microsoft Identity under that, as well as Microsoft Account, also known as MSA. So pretty much anytime you need to sign in to Microsoft, it uses my service. And on top of that, at Build, we announced the Microsoft Graph. So the service that's powered Microsoft Graph is my team runs that. My team also contributes to Microsoft Graph as part of Active Directory. So all the user application information that's stored in Active Directory is funneled through the Active Directory Graph, and then developers can write on top of Microsoft Graph.
That's amazing. Congratulations on the announcement.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your career path? I think you started as a dev, right?
Yes. Actually, way back in 1996, actually started Microsoft as an intern. So I'm an intern. I worked back then on Exchange. And I came back to Microsoft full time as a developer in 98. I stayed in the engineering track my whole career path. Mm-hmm. I worked on the Microsoft Remote Desktop Service, so you can remote desktop into your machine, and it also a platform that many collaboration products or services actually use. We call it Remote Desktop Protocol. An example, like we have Xbox or HoloLens when they do some of the streaming or a remote projection, so mm-hmm. that uses a Remote Desktop Protocol, or Skype when you want to share your desktop. Mm. So it's both as a product as also as a platform. So I have been in that space for the first 15 years of my career, from developer to managers, and then running sort of engineering all up. We also grown the business to over $1 billion business as a remote desktop as part of Windows Server workload. Sort of toward the end of that, I also transitioned that product from as a kind of part of a Windows Server product to a Azure service. After that, I run part of the enterprise mobility and security suite. So I run the Microsoft Intune engineering team, for two years, and then literally see the growth of EMS, which has been the fastest growing business in the history of Microsoft, to over $1 billion business. So, and also the usage from, when I started on the team, we had about 10,000 devices in the in our services. To today, there are over 4 million devices. Wow. So that's pretty amazing. And about 8 months ago, Scott Guthrie asked me to run the identity division. So identity, actually, AD is a part of EMS suite, so it's actually sort of the sister team. Mm-hmm. But I kind of go from running just engineering, now running as an engineering business leader, so responsible for both engineering plus program management. Mm-hmm. So that has to be my ride.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
It's an amazing journey. And you seem like very expert on this area of like Windows Server, remote desktop, and now the identity. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about challenges? What kind of challenges did you have over this huge career?
I think, you know, as I sort of think about like what helps to me to grow my career, one of the things is that I always been sort of known to be very technical, very strong in terms of drive results, but also just a collaboration. I think that kind of really kind of anchored in terms of my strengths and also kind of helped myself to grow, but more important, help me, my team and the product to grow. The other thing is also just really have that growth mindset to adapt, because, you know, first 15 years of my career is largely anchored around the shipping product with operating system. So it's more traditional software development and shipping. But I'm always interested in, hey, you know, we're doing great at Microsoft in terms of our sort of software development cycle. But, you know, running live service is a very different set of challenge. And how can we do better? And how can we learn from others in the industry? One of the things I have been doing for the last 3 years is taking my leadership team like to the Bay Area and invite a bunch of engineering leaders from some of our competitors. But, you know, companies running large scale services so that we can learn from each other. And, you know, because engineering is not rocket science, and there are best practices, there are things we can learn from each other. And that has been very useful. And it's always an iterative journey. So it's not like you go from zero to, you know, 100 miles in just 1 year. So it's always how, what's the journey, I think, was the challenge is, especially our muscle has been centered around sort of the multi-year, if you know, sort of iteration cycle versus a change to live site, you know, a lot frequent, you know, weekly deployment, if not more frequent, as well be more data telemetry driven. So a lot of these, there's an engineering aspect, but there's also the cultural aspect of it, right? And then now with my current role, being the foundational service for across Microsoft, I think that kind of just added the like it's almost like a megaphone in terms of the dimension, in terms of the complexity. I think Scott talked about sort of I was in the local league and now I'm in the Olympic game, you know. I guess that's one of the analogy. And then for me, it's like, and I look at a sort of my current challenge, there's the vertical sort of business, which is part of enterprise mobility security, which is over $1 billion business, which is awesome. But I'm also providing the foundational platform as Azure Active Directory and as a sort of commercial consumer authentication identity system for the entire company. And the amount of almost like the inputs in terms of whether it's feature requirement, customer needs, and or life site issues, you name it, like every day almost is a different challenge. And so it's really about how do I get focused? How can I drive for clarity for the team? And we can, you know, both be collaborative, but deliver results, but also, you know, they're just impossible to satisfy all the needs. It's also, how do you say, to me, it's not just a say no, but how do you say no, and how can you unblock the customer or our internal partner team in a way that's creative sometimes. So these are just some of the challenges.
This is amazing. It's, yeah, I see you have a huge responsibility like in the Olympic League. So you said you have your own tools to get focused. Do you want to share some of your tools with us?
You know, like, I mean, with my... I guess I'll share two kind of stories. When I took on the Intune engineering team 3 years ago, it was pretty clear my challenges, which is, okay, how do we evolve sort of Intune both the product, the service, as well as the engineering culture to increase agility and scale the service? So the problem statement was pretty clear. So it's just, I know the North Star I need to get, the challenge is how, right? And I think a part of it is to always, a leader, you need to, even though you don't need to get somewhere, but it's not just about, it's not about the destination, it's also the journey. Mm. So the journey involves people and the culture. So it's actually more important to shift the culture, which is much harder than just the engineering work. So how to get team aligned in terms of why we need to increase the agility, what's the benefit? And often there's more, it goes through cycle, you get worse before you get better. And be able to communicate that, to create that clarity and create a level of optimism. I think that's where to get team really stay with you. And then you get incremental, quick wins, I should say. Mm-hmm. If you're in this long journey without quick wins in the short term, then it's hard to see almost the light of the tunnel. So be able to generate some quick wins, that would generate more energy and get team more focused. And in my current role, it's more of like, wow, the complexity just suddenly like magnified. So for me, being on the job sort of in a new space, listen is like, before you can create clarity, almost you need to listen and be able to kind of take it back to understand the landscape and understand the complexity. And I guess up to this point, some of my learning is I have to be patient with myself, because the engineering part of me sometimes want to, wow, I really want to know this fast and soon, but sometimes knowledge just takes time. Right. You can't just, you'll learn as much as possible sometimes, but it does take time. So I think one thing is be patient, be open-minded, and listen, and learn, right? And then once you absorb enough, then you can try to step back to say, okay, with all these inputs, how do I create some clarity? And I think sometimes, frankly, it's not like the days when I'm at work. It's literally when on weekends when I go on a hike, on weekends when I'm doing a walk with my fiance. And there are just moments I were like, aha, I have this idea, or aha, this is creates clarity for the team. So you almost have to stay outside of work and get some of the, whether it's a hike or whether it's like a walk, a coffee, sometimes to give that space. And then you generate clarity for myself, and then in turn generate clarity for the team. But it will take time. And that's like, I think we all need to be a little bit patient with ourselves.
That's amazing. It's an amazing story that you get these like clarity and ideas when you're hiking or when you're walking at the weekend about, like, it's like running in the back of your mind to solve these problems.
Yeah, it's not always a straight line. You know, I think I discovered that along the way, and I think it's okay to be iterative. Mm-hmm. I have... since identity is being the center of the company, for every team's needs sort of dependencies. So the leaders across the company are my peers. Sometimes they often, I get a lot of advice, I get a lot of inputs, and sometimes they also tell me, you must hear a lot of inputs and advice, there's no lack of that. But the key thing, the best advice I've always gotten is just say, we support you, you need to, take your time, changes will take time, making progress take time. I think that's really the essence of it. So you kind of have to be patient, but then, you kind of stay out of the day-to-day sort of the grind, and in order to generate a level of clarity. Mm-hmm. And it may not be just one, right? Maybe over time as well.
That's amazing. So you touched based on advices through your career. Mm-hmm. Is there like any mentors or people that helped you throughout your career with like advices so you can grow and can you tell us a little
many,
more about the
stories? I definitely have many different mentors throughout at a different sort of levels. A few, I guess, I'll share. One is Eric Brackner. I mean, he's actually in Windows org, and he's been Microsoft a long time, and he actually write an engineering column called "I'm Right," which is kind of funny. He's somebody I know from very beginning when I just a developer lead. You know, he and I know almost for like 18 years of almost my entire career. And I would say he's one of the few people have seen my growth throughout my career, Microsoft, somebody who understands me. And so I can have that sort of unfiltered sort of dialogue for my challenges. But also somebody just has always the instinct, no, I would succeed. So whenever I have up and downs, he always two steps ahead of me saying, oh, this is what you'll do, and then later I said, how do you know? One of the advice he gave me that that's always kind of, in my mind, as I kind of, being, the very few sort of, female sort of engineering leaders, kind of along my career, I would say. He also said, and I actually kind of distinctively do not like to say to be kind of recognized as a woman, because I feel like somehow then people will mistake my success as because I'm female or not because of my capability. And I remember Eric said, well, Joy, just remember, like the men have many advantages, in the industry, just like in informal networking, etc. The only advantage you have is stand out as a woman, in a meeting.
Yep.
So take advantage of that, because that's the only thing you have. So I think that really helped me to be comfortable. I mean, comfortable, not like I'm never shy in a meeting, but comfortable being sort of singled out as a, oh, you are a woman, or I'm like, okay, so that makes it easy, because one of the things I remembered is it makes me very memorable, right? Because if you're the only one that stands out in a meeting, you're very memorable. So that's my advantage. I'm like, why not take advantage of that?
Yeah, take your advantage if you have it.
Right.
We have a few.
So that's helpful. And I think kind of fast forward now, I would say as sort of, like a lot of CVPs in the company, have very many challenges in their sort of own quote, business. Mm. So now to me, it's almost, if not peer therapy, but basically it's a support system and a device. And because, I remember a lot of leaders or CEO, they always say it's lonely up there, right? And then I don't think I truly understand until I got my current role, because as much as I report to Scott, he's very supportive. I have my peers and all that. But I run the identity division, so it is my responsibility. I mean, I work with my leadership team and the sort of decision-making, not just me. But at the end of the day,
it's all on your shoulder,
This is like, I'm the one who, making the decisions to sort of leading steering the ship, right? Mm-hmm. In some ways, it's lonely in that sense. And so having a group of leaders as my peer, not just to say advice, but frankly, sometimes just sharing our challenges is comforting. And that's actually kind of almost the peer support, peer mentoring has been very helpful. Sometimes you just want somebody has a similar experience to bounce off your ideas, or you just want somebody to listen to you.
Right.
And sometimes almost when you talk through the problems or how my thinking, you generate some clarity.
Right.
And then that's been helpful. So that to me, it just become a networker. Kind of effect, not a one-on-one mentoring per se, but just a network of my peers having that support.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's great. I hear the same. I read a lot of books about startups, and all like CEOs, they say they are lonely.
Mm-hmm.
But that's great that you have the support with other leadership. Yeah. That's amazing. You touched a little bit about like being a woman in mm-hmm. tech. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about this, since this is the show, like, it's girls.
Right.
So how do you have any stories you want to share, or why do you think we need more women yeah. in tech? Yeah.
I mean, when I graduated from college at RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, as in computer science degree in 1998, like, I literally remember, if I'm not one of the three, I'm the one of very few out of like 100, 120 computer science graduates, right? So I have always, I'm almost used to like sort of, you know, you're the singleton of females in my class. And when I came to Microsoft, you know, I was the only woman in my team, right? A team of 10 or whatever mm. that is. I have been always just kind of trying to succeed with my own sort of intellectual horsepower, my own hard work. But it's definitely, you know, recently at Microsoft Build, I hosted a woman in business and technology reception. Kind of my theme is why fit in when you were born to be different, you know?
Right.
And so kind of, as I was trying to, I don't know if I would call my fitting, but I was trying to sort of fit the tech industry norm as much as comfortable, but you almost feel different.
Mm.
And so in that sense, having more women, then it becomes like, you know, you go on the street or you go to the mall, you don't feel different because
right.
the society is more made of a 50-50. So there's a cultural aspect. But more importantly, I do think there are different ideas, different collaboration styles, so that we not all becomes like one type. And that generates more creativity and improves the collaboration. I definitely see in the team when you have more diversity, you know, male, female, or just different people have different background, is very different in terms of the energy, the creativity, compared to, you know, if a team mm. just having the same background, the same kind of experience. So that's one. And the other thing is, as I sort of grow my career, a lot of things I feel like I navigate through my own trial and error, just kind of almost like charge through. And I don't want to talk about it, because if I talk about it, I feel like somehow I either complain or somehow, you know, like, I feel like, you know, I'm the problem, troublemaker.
But it's not true, though.
It's not true. Things has changed quite a bit. And what I realized was, I don't remember how many years ago, maybe 5 years ago or so, when I first went to Grace Hopper. And I think at that time, I'm pretty senior. And I remember distinctively is when I sort of had a lunch with the woman on my team when we all start sharing our story. It's kind of a safe setting, and it's a different, it's in a conference, you have the energy. And I remember a lot of sort of the challenges my team face, I face as the same. But when I share some of my story, I remember the girls on my team, they just jaw dropped. They said, Joy, you had that similar challenge? Because somehow they just thought I was the, I don't know, Iron woman or Iron girl, like I never, you know, experienced those
yeah.
problems. Like example, like insecure about I'm, you know, there's an imposter syndrome
right.
as a typical one. I realized by just sharing that, it helps. It's not like you just solve it, but just knowing, oh, I'm not alone, right? Okay, doesn't no matter how successful somebody you see as if this person never had the issue, actually they have, and then they had, and so that really help. And I would say another thing is the whole unconscious bias, you know, is often, you know, like we thought, okay, this is 2017, you know, sort of, you know, I mean, we talk about diversity, inclusion, women in tech, I mean, there's a ton of support, but it's always the unconscious bias that gets you. And also just sharing that, you know, just even as recent as my current role, one of the stories, you know, like Microsoft, you have a CVP has this called a 888, like a shuttle. So you can, you know, that specifically you can arrange to take you from one meeting to another to save some time. And so, you know, I think building 34, which site is building, typically often you have many shuttles waiting along because probably there's a lot of meetings, the CVP shows up or not. So there's one time I went to a shuttle, and there's few, so I have to ask which one's for me. So one of them, I knocked on the window. I said, is this for Joy? And the driver looked at me and said, this is for CVP. one of my directs with me, and I mean, eventually we figured out which one the shuttle is for me, and he's like, we're just looking at each other, like, did we just hear what we heard? And he's a guy, right? He's like, yeah, you know, I mean, this is like maybe just a couple of months ago. But, you know, guess what? Those just exist. Yeah. But it's more, to me, it's more of a how do you handle it, right? Yeah. In this case, I'll laugh out and it can be my story. some is a lot more challenging, especially when women, in, you know, early in their career. But my point is, it doesn't matter how senior, how early in your career, you always have that challenge is how let that not bother you. Mm. And have more women becomes, okay, that not become so weird, yeah, to have, yeah, a woman, yeah, CVP or somehow, you know. So I think that's why, right?
That's very funny. Because also you look so young, maybe this is why.
I'm not that young, I just look young.
I will not ask about your age, but you look very young. Okay, that's amazing. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Grace Hopper. It seems like you're on the board,
yeah,
member.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about this experience? When, yeah, did you start? I mean, how did it start, and why?
Yeah, yeah.
Why are you on the board member?
Yeah, yeah. So, Anita Board Institute, which is the organization that hosted the Grace Hopper Conference, actually, ABI, short, like sort of AKA ABI. Kind of founded in 1997, so it actually started more from the academic side. There's, mm, a few, like, you know, like sort of professors and with industry women sort of founded. Anita is one of them, founded this organization and then kind of created the Grace Hopper Conference. And Rick Rashid, he was the senior vice president running Microsoft Research. As part of that research community, like in, you know, the research community, he was one of the very early members on the board. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft Research has always been kind of close partnership, and then sort of Microsoft Research represent Microsoft on the board as well, sponsor a lot of Grace Hopper events. Mm-hmm. As Grace Hopper conference itself grew over the last 20 years or so, that. So Microsoft sponsorship get sort of broadened. That we're one of the sort of the platinum sponsors, and partly is as Grace Hopper, Women in Tech, that becomes more kind of a main. I would call it now become more like a mainstream topic, not just sort of okay somewhere diversity and inclusion. Right. A lot more inspires a lot more women in, you know, at Microsoft to attend conference, get inspired, and come back. So Rick has been on the board for many years until last year. He retired. I mean, he kind of retired from the board in end of 2015. So January, like 2016, like Catherine Hogan sent me a mail say, hey, Joy, would you be interested in joining the board? And a part of the reason she asked me is actually, frankly, is believe it or not, it's add diversity to the board, because the board has a mix of academic and the industry. But a lot of the executives, the very senior executives across like 35 or so companies, are actually business leaders. And the business, often some may have engineering background, but some more like from, you know, the business background. So even on ABI, the board members there's actually not a lot is a technical woman in engineering.
Oh.
So when she asked me, I was like distinguished engineer at Microsoft running engineering team. So, and being also, you know, a minority, that actually adds a lot of diversity to the board itself.
Right, right.
So that was one of the reasons. And I remember when I joined the board, you have, you know, like the CTO of Facebook, and you have, you know, the very senior VP of Google, and or the other, you know, basically main major tech company. You know, I felt like, wow, like it's almost like these are the giants of the in the industry. Yeah. Kind of feel a little bit intimidating. I remember my
we are one of them.
Yeah, and I remember my first and the board meeting is very different from any of the sort of leadership meetings, because board are advising the organization. So it's very much remember the first meeting is very different than...
How was it? Can you tell us a little?
Because as an engineering leader, right, you're in a meeting, you are the one who asking the question and then you drive execution.
Mm-hmm.
But as a board members, you meet three times a year. Mm-hmm. So you are not like with the organization, the leadership of an organization. So you are not really overseeing their execution mm-hmm. that way. So they, you are there to, you know, making sure that from the strategy perspective, what advice, you know, are there some course correction, but you're not responsible for execution. So I remember like, you know, when I first sort of started the board meeting, it's like the part of me, you know, as leaders, we all trying to problem solve. That's not what you're there for. You are trying to ask a question, is getting the organization leadership to think about, you know, are they on strategy or not? And are they think about their longer term plan? And are they their gaps? But it's not trying to, you know, run their day-to-day business. So that's a very different role, right? So that has been very interesting, I mean, and a great learning experience from that perspective. But now kind of fast forward, you know, a year now, I feel a lot more comfortable, you know? And I think the lesson is probably, it's not even taking this board experience. I think in any new role, I think, you know, no matter how successful you have been in whatever capacity, when you're getting a new challenge, I think we all feel uncomfortable.
Right.
But then over time, you are, you know, identify, oh, here's where I can add value, you know, and therefore, then you feel like, hey, I belong here. I can add value. So that's one of the things just I learned is never get sort of, wow, these people must have way more experience than I am. Why am I here? What value am I adding,
right?
So that kind of, it's awesome experience, but at the same time, also just a learning, be comfortable, even though you think somehow, am I belonging here or do I deserve to be here?
That's amazing. I really love these stories. Like anyone can relate. Mm-hmm. Wherever like your low level or high level, you can relate to these stories. That's amazing.
And I think it's always a learning journey. It doesn't, like, there's no stop. You say, okay, now I know everything. I think that's when things get dangerous, if you think you know everything.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone is learning at the level they are. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, now it's time for our lightning round experience.
Okay.
Okay, first question, coffee or tea?
Both. I drink coffee in the morning with breakfast because I get up extremely early and always a severely lack of sleep. But then during the day, I drink tea because if I drink more caffeine, then I would never be able to sleep. So.
Okay, so both of them. What's the first thing you do in the morning when you wake up? Rather than
yoga.
Yoga.
I get up at 4 in the morning and I do 2 hours yoga and also do some kind of aerobic exercise.
Wow. Yeah. That's very early for me.
That's kind of where I, you know, both keep healthy and also kind of my stress relief valve, I call it.
That's amazing. I'm always surprised with people like finding time to work out and relax and waking very.
Not the relaxed part. Definitely
yoga
the workout.
Is relaxed.
No. My yoga is the sort of the power yoga, so it's very strenuous. So it's more
for a role, you know, strength training versus sort of mind piece.
Okay. I'm still surprised. It's amazing. Okay. Next question. If you still code, what's your favorite language?
Actually, I haven't coded for a while just because I have been, you know, overhead for the, you know, many years. But I before when I do code, I'm more of a C++, you know, because I work hardcore. In Windows hardcore, that's right.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's your favorite app?
On mobile?
Yeah.
I would say I do use a range of social media app and, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and you know, a little bit Twitter. Not as haven't quite, you know, managed the Twitter as well, and a bit of LinkedIn. But I would say Fitbit, just because I do track my steps every day. So
that
would be my other favorite app.
That's perfectly favorite app. Okay, what's the most useless gadget you bought?
Useless?
Yeah, it's something you bought but then you'd never used.
Useless. Well, I have, I wouldn't say most useless. I had a drop cam for a while. I thought I would, so I bought drop cam not to secure the home, was to watch my puppy. And after a while, you kind of get bored. So now it just sits there.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's a good idea, I guess. Okay, next question is, if there's any product you dream to work on, even if it's outside of Microsoft, what would it be?
It would be Fitbit. Well, the reason, like in the house, right? Because I do believe in, like, you know, like, I mean, how much money, like, consumers spend on, we all spend on in terms of, you know, getting fit, lose weight, and, you know, nutrition, exercise, all that. So to me, it doesn't have to be fit. Basically, a device and a kind of an application can really analyze not just your health, but just like, you know, how do I know how much nutrition? How am I doing well with my nutrition? And you know, do I exercise enough? Too much? I think that would be awesome because I think then, you know, for all of us, especially women, like we constantly think about our weight and all that. It's like, what a stress relief if we just have to tell us what to do.
Exactly. That's true. There's a lot of apps right now, but every time you have to put the food you eat and like.
Right, and it's more of a like a sort of.
More hard work than.
More hard work, right? And I think you always cheat, right? Like, I don't think you really track exactly what you eat or not.
Yeah. I mean, so much work. I start the app and then delete the app.
Right. Same here, right?
Okay, that's cool. Next question. I don't know if you watch Star Wars or Star Trek, but we usually ask Star Wars or Star Trek.
Neither.
Okay, that's okay.
Yeah. But I want to say if we pick, I like Star Wars better than Star Trek.
Okay, cool. Okay, let's go to the last question, which is, do you have any advice you want to share? Let's look at this camera.
Okay.
Do you have any advice you want to share?
Yeah, I would say, as I think about my career for the last almost 20 years, when I have the biggest learning time, like, you know, like, for example, presently, I just feel like I can get fired anytime, is almost when you take the risk. The risk is so high, it feels almost overwhelming. I think that's when I get the most learning. And so, therefore, I would advise is maximizing the learning by taking more risk.
But how do you feel the balance between the fear and the learning? Because you see what I mean, right?
Yeah.
The fear of risk. I mean, the risk, there is also either a huge learning.
Yeah.
Even failure is a huge learning. But there is, it could, I mean.
I would say, like, what I tell, like, everybody I mentor these days is, if you just want your career progression, I call it career, like, you know, you increase your level or
step by step,
or like say take on the next sort of the role, that is different from just taking risk learning. Taking risk might be you're being like doing this, you suddenly do something very different. And that doesn't necessarily in the short term translate to sort of career progression, but you'll definitely get a ton of learning. So I think you just be clear with yourself. What's your risk tolerance? It's not like everybody have the same risk tolerance. Mm. I think you have to be true to yourself with what's the risk tolerance. And understand that, and then take a longer term view, which is don't focus on, okay, what's the fastest way for me to get to the next career level. I think it's incredibly hard for everyone, especially early in your career, to say, great, you say that because you're successful, you know, I just want to get to the next level. Give me my promo. I mean, I get that, I've been there, but I do think all of us, especially we're passionate to stay in technology, your career is not defined in the next even 3 years or the next, you know, 12, 18 months. It's much longer than that. And in order to have that longevity, it is the learning that sustains you, the passion, the learning. So that's where taking risk is where you get the learning and you can sustain it. But I do think the degree of the risk so that you not just get to the total fear sort of, then you're not learning either, right? So I think there's a degree of risk, each person is different. And then you just have to kind of understand your tolerance or your risk-taking level and adapt to that. Mm-hmm. But definitely be mindful about, you know, the short-term approach versus thinking longer horizon.
I love that advice. Thank you very much, Joy, for coming to Girls.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything, any links you want to share. I'll share maybe your Twitter.
Sure.
any public profile, I'll share it in the description. And thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Bye.